Next in number 15-1862, Medtronic against Lifeport Sciences. Mr. Ilacqua, do I have the pronunciation right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, this appeal from the Patent Trial and Appeals Board, which I'll refer to as the Board today, is not about a dispute over whether the Board did a correct analysis of a prior art reference. This is about the fact that the Board did not do any Graham analysis of the most relevant portion of the Ostrowski prior art reference as it relates to figures 29 to 35 of that reference and the accompanying description. Because of this most egregious example of an analytical error, the Board's conclusions that the Ostrowski reference does not teach a permanent curve that's found on pages 31 and 32 of its final written decision are entitled to no deference under this Court's decision in Smith and Nephew versus Ray.
Can I double check something? You rely in your brief just on how the Board, you say, is wrong about Ostrowski, in particular about hook 206.
That's correct.
So in column 9 of Ostrowski at the bottom, it says hook 206 is the end of 202. 202 can be flexible. Why does that not defeat your appeal? As simple as that.
Okay. First, 202 is the strut.
And it says 206 is the end of it. It doesn't say it's a separate piece.
That's correct. 206 is the end of
the
strut 202.
So presumably made of the same material, so it can be flexible. And in the absence of contrary evidence from you to say, no, notwithstanding that it's made of the same material as the flexible 202 material, it itself is not flexible, and I don't see the evidence.
Well, the flexible issue, Your Honor, is what's been raised here as a flexible material is inconsistent with the patent, with what the patent teaches itself and what Claim 16 teaches. For example, in Claim 16 of the patent, of the 662 patent, and I'll read you the section. It's an endoluminal prosthesis comprising of at least one protrusion cut out of said frame element having a resiliently flexible bend formed therein, wherein the at least one protrusion has a permanent curve. So in Claim 16, the protrusion must, according to that claim, have both a resiliently flexible bend and a fixed arc curve under the Board's construction. By that claim itself, if the material is flexible, it cannot have a permanent curve, it's at odds with that claim. It's also at odds with what Lifeport told the Board below, where I quote at A246, figures 2 and 3 of the patent in suit have a resiliently flexible bend and also have a permanent curve. So the two are not mutually exclusive. And the fact that you have a flexible material does not preclude it from meeting the Board's construction, which is a preset curve that maintains a fixed arc. You could have a flexible material that maintains a fixed arc in all configurations, which is what Ostrowski actually shows. And Ostrowski also goes beyond that, because in the written description, it actually tells you that you can determine by the material that you select and the thickness of that material what the resilience or flexibility could be. So you could have a material where the strut 202 would be of the same material. It could, and Ostrowski teaches that you could have it more rigid at the end if you wished it to be. But this is an apparatus claim. And in the apparatus claim, what you have to look for is structure.
Isn't it the case that the term flexible bend is suggesting a flex point at one particular point at which there may be the capacity for this otherwise inflexible feature to bend,
well, Your Honor,
as opposed to a flexible bend being an indication that the entire structure is flexible. That was the way I understood this language that you quoted from 16.
Your Honor, I don't believe that we're dealing with two different materials or two. When they're talking in Claim 16 of a flexible bend and a permanent curve, we're dealing with the same materials. And these devices, whether they be filters or stents, they're all made up of the same material. They're all made up of nitinol or stainless steel or plastic. Right.
But you could have the same material and depending, for example, on thickness or maybe even tempering of a particular portion of the strut, you could have a different behavior of the strut, right?
That's correct. You could have it be flexible at one part, and it could be such rigid at some part that it would maintain a curve. And that's really all the claim construction calls for. And I think when looking at the claim construction, we have to ask ourselves, is there any part in Ostrowski that doesn't meet that claim construction? Does it have a preset curve? Yes, it does. It says right in Ostrowski that it's a predetermined curve. Does it maintain a fixed arc? In every one of those claim figures, in every one of the figures, 29 to 35, there are six of them. It shows it in every possible configuration, and it shows the arc to be fixed and maintained.
But your reliance on Ostrowski seemed to me to be entirely based on those figures. You reference a couple of points in the specification, mm-hmm. other than the figures, as supporting your interpretation of the figures. But frankly, I read those and didn't find that they were helpful. You're really relying entirely on the fact that as you view the figures, the arc in each of the figures is the same. Isn't that true?
That's true, and the fact that there is an admission in the brief of Lifeport that actually now agrees with us that each of those arcs or talons in each one of those figures is unchanging.
Well, that may be, but that doesn't necessarily mean, it would seem to me, or at least the argument is, that they are not flexible. They simply have been depicted at points at which the arc is drawn in the same fashion. That doesn't mean that the arc isn't flexible or is permanent simply because we have several iterations of it which look the same.
Your Honor, I understand what you're saying, that because you have a flexible material, it's possible that in all of those configurations, which it shows not only does it show that it's a flexible, it shows that it's a flexible material because it teaches that, but it also shows that it's unchanging. But what's critical here is that it shows a force of blood flowing because it's attached to the body lumen. Those figures actually show it attached inside a body lumen, like a vessel of an artery or a vein. So they show that, and they also show that there's a blood flow with arrow B. So having those forces on it, it still shows that the curvature has not changed. The fact that it's of a flexible material that could change if enough force were put on it, that's not really the test. The test of the claim construction is it a fixed arc in every configuration? So they show it here inside the catheter, outside the catheter, fully expanded, fully compressed, and they show that is maintained in the same curvature throughout. And this is an apparatus claim. We can't read in process limitations. We can't read in how is this made or what forces external to that could be put on it. That's reading unclaimed limitations into this claim and then saying that this is exactly what Smith tells us not to do. The Smith case tells us, don't look at unclaimed limitations when you're looking at whether or not something is or is not obvious. And what's also interesting is that the board itself very recently cited HM Electronics versus 3M Innovative Services only several weeks ago for this exact proposition.
Of course, as I'm sure you're familiar with, there's a fair amount of case law for the proposition that you really can't rely heavily on drawings when you get into the questions of the precision of a particular device. And the drawings are naturally somewhat, well, they're just illustrative. They're not done to an engineer's precision, typically. So you're relying on drawings, but there's nothing, so far as I can see, in the specification, would you agree, that gives support for your interpretation of those drawings?
Your Honor, I cannot agree with that because...
What is it in the specification that you would point to? You say, there's the point at which we show that this remains with the same arc throughout.
With respect to rigidity, bear with me for just a moment, Your Honor. Within the specification itself, it does address the issue of two things. Of one, flexibility, and it says in the specification, if you're looking for flexibility or resiliency, you have to look to the type of material that you are going to use. And the interesting thing here is that in Ostrowski, it lists nitinol, stainless steel, and other biocompatible materials. In the 662 patent, it lists nitinol and stainless steel, ceramics, and plastics. It lists the same body of materials. And then it says in Ostrowski, if you want to know how to set the flexibility, look at the differences in thickness of those same materials. And interestingly, in Lifeport's brief to this court, it states plastic can be a flexible material and it can also be rigid, and they agree that by changing the differences in thickness, it also changes the rigidity of that material. So there's no disagreement that changing differences in the thickness changes rigidity. That's all taught in Ostrowski. And the fact that we have an apparatus claim here, I think that look at the patent drawings, Your Honor, as far as my understanding of the case law is part of the teaching, and that this patent is looked upon just like any other publication would be. And you're looking at those drawings, and it shows it in all the different configurations. So we're not relying on just one drawing. But what's interesting is Lifeport told the board below, look at figures 2 and 3 of the 662 patent. There's only two configurations there, an open and closed configuration. There's no mention of nitinol or any other material. There's no mention of resiliency or anything other than that. And they relied on those two figures for the conclusion that it taught a permanent curve. And here, those are two static drawings. And here we have six static drawings showing the same thing, but with more detail, with blood flow, intraluminal, everything. And it's the same exact thing. So they relied on two. We have six.
You are well into your rebuttal time.
Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate it. I would like to reserve the remainder of my time.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Even though Medtronic's positions were a moving target both before the board and coming up on appeal, the board accepted Medtronic's final contentions for review. And those final contentions, the board found insufficient evidence to meet their burden as a petitioner. Remember, we're in an administrative context where there's a petition which is supposed to set forth the theories and the evidence and the arguments. So in short, none of Ostrowski's protrusions or ends of the flexible struts keep a permanent curve, and that's what the evidence showed. On appeal, Your Honors are correct, Medtronic seems to be focusing just on end 206. And I myself was going to point Judge Bryson to the very same part. It's at A295, column 9, lines 62 to 65, the part of the Ostrowski record that says that the struts are flexible and the ends are part of the struts. So it's a pretty simple syllogism that the ends are flexible as well. And then there's more.
Well, in the absence of evidence saying otherwise.
Exactly, Judge Toronto. And the type of contrary or cautionary evidence otherwise would be exactly what you would find in the patent under review itself, such as at column 6, line basically the first three to five lines, talking about heat setting. Judge Bryson, I think you used the term tempering, which is probably the same thing, although I couldn't say that.
Well, that's what I had in mind, even if it was wrong.
but in any case, back to Ostrowski, we have column 10, lines 64 to 66, and that section underscores that the materials are elastic. They use the word elastic. So just to put on the table in front of everybody the entire record, we also have Ms. Gold's testimony. And Ms. Gold's testimony can be found at A390, paragraph 53. A superior expert actually in the field of the invention, unlike petitioner's expert. And I bring all that up, I put all that evidence on the table in front of us, supporting the conclusion reached by the board, because this is a substantial evidence appeal.
What was it that Dr. Loomis had to say on this point? Because I think, if I recall, one of his declarations, I don't think we had in the appendix, but do you recall what it was that he had to say on this exact point?
The most he said was that in the configurations depicted in figures 33 to 35, there's no depicted change in the curvature, which of course, for all the reasons discussed already, that doesn't get them where they need to be under the undisputed claim construction. So this is a substantial evidence appeal. It's well briefed. I'm not going to use up much of the panel's time. I just want to make two points and, of course, make myself available for questioning. Point number one, in this substantial evidence appeal, there was never any acknowledgement of the existence of the expert testimony from Ms. Golds. No acknowledgement of the existence of the expert testimony supporting the board's decision. I, for one, do not understand how one presents a substantial evidence appeal to this court without at least coming up with some rationale for disregarding or debunking the expert testimony that does support the conclusion of the board. And then the second point that I'd like to make, and then I'll make myself available for questions and then have a seat, is, and maybe address one or two things they said, but as a remedy, what they seek, what Medtronic seeks, is a remand on the issue of obviousness, and particularly the obviousness theory that they present to this panel today. But at oral argument before the board, they repudiated the obviousness theory they're presenting to the panel today.
Are you reading from or pointing to a portion of that transcript that's in our joint appendix or no?
Yes, at A229, lines 4 to 5, in their very quick presentation of the part of Ostrovsky, the item 202, item 206 in Ostrovsky that they presented to the board, they began that discussion by saying, quote, "Actually, we are using it," namely Ostrovsky, "just to show the pointed tip." Just to show the pointed tip. That is exactly how they presented their obviousness theory in the petition, A99.
The next paragraph of that transcript does shift to figures 33 to 35 and number 206 and says that Ostrovsky also teaches that in all those configurations, it also teaches a permanent curve.
Agreed, Your Honor. They do discuss that. But once they get to that part of the discussion in the transcript, it's very much disembodied from what they presented in the claim charts in their petition, A93 to A99. And the claim charts in the petition there presuppose or make the argument that white is the reference that has the permanent curve. But by now it's pretty clear and it's undisputed on appeal that white, the portion they show as having the permanent curve, ends up lying flat or perhaps even goes a little bit radially inward. Bottom line, it changes its curvature. So they've departed from the argument on appeal that they went into in their petition. So finally, just a quick collection of observations about what we heard during my brother's opening. I think the words he used right out of the gate were, "The board did no Graham analysis of the most relevant part of the reference." Well, I would commend Your Honor's attention back to A93 to A99. Their petition did not contain any Graham analysis of the part of the reference that they are highlighting today on appeal. Incidentally, if you read the board's decision, I believe it's A31 to 32, there is in fact exactly the Graham analysis that one would do had they raised that in their petition, which is to say the board was searching for the existence of a claimed feature in the prior art. That is the scope of the prior art that the board was seeking. That is exactly the Graham analysis. The next observation from my brother, he said that every possible configuration of Ostrovsky is shown in figures 33 to 35. I would commend Your Honor's attention to the red brief, page 48, where we summarize the evidence, make the salient point that those figures do not show every possible configuration. On this point, they point to the section of the figure labeled B. They say it shows the forces of the blood flow. That's what you heard today, Your Honors, during oral argument. But contrary to what you heard, Your Honors, at column 9, line 31, B is the label for the direction of blood flow. It's not a force diagram. It's not designed to depict any sort of in vivo action of the forces of blood. It's simply a notation of what the direction of the blood flow would be. And as Your Honors are probably aware, blood doesn't flow with a uniform force or velocity or flux. Blood is something in the body that pumps. I think perhaps judicial notice could be taken that the heart pumps blood. And finally, the last point we heard was that Ostrovsky does suggest enough to a person of skill in the art to teach the permanent curve, because it teaches that you can change the thickness of a wire or change the thickness of a piece of material. I don't dispute that. There is discussion that the thickness of the material can be customized for the chosen amount of flexibility. That is what Ostrovsky says. But the salient point to make here is that if we're still focused on figures 33 to 35, the part that they really need to be rigid to make their argument that they're making today is the very thinnest part depicted in the figure. So necessarily, if you're customizing flexibility based on the thickness of the material, their argument actually works against them, and it proves the opposite of what they intend. And unless Your Honors have any further questions, I'll yield to my brother.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. If I could just clarify a couple of procedural things. One is that the reason that no mention was made of Ms. Gold's expert testimony was because she made no expert opinion on this issue. And if you look at her testimony at 390, you will see she didn't even reference the 206 as being flexible. She referenced 202 strut as being flexible material. But she made no analysis of 29 through 35. So there was nothing to discuss or rebut. With respect to whether or not this was in our petition, if the court would look at A70 to 71 and A92, in the original petition, we did discuss figures 34 and 33. We also incorporated this discussion in the Ostrovsky and White ground. So this was in our petition right from the beginning.
I'm sorry, what were those citations, please?
The citations for where it was in the petition would be at A70-71 and at A92. And Ms. Gold's paragraph that was referred to at A390 does not have a full discussion of this, and there was nothing to rebut on this issue. With respect to, again, the materials that we were referring to, I think that Your Honor asked for some cites on that. And in the Ostrovsky reference at A295 at column 10, line 60 to 65, they discuss the selection of materials will determine the flexibility and resiliency. And at column 6 to 12-14 lines at A293, it is, of course, understood that differences in thickness relative to width will affect the flexibility of the element. And what was just stated by counsel, that it needs to be rigid at that point, it does not need to be rigid. This is the whole false premise in this appeal, is that talon does not have to be rigid. It just has to maintain a fixed curve. But the rigidity of a material that starts out as elastic or flexible, as is depicted in the 662 patent as well, can take on a permanent curve in different and various configurations. Also,
I'm not sure I understood that point. Are you saying that it needs to have a particular memory?
No, it doesn't have to have a memory.
Are you saying that? Well, why don't you say again, if you want.
What it's saying is that if we look at the definition of that has been provided to us. I don't know if I have it that handy.
A preset curve,
right? That has a fixed arc,
right,
that's maintained in all of the configurations. What in Ostrovsky is missing? In those drawings, What is missing? There's nothing missing in that definition.
But before that, you were saying, well, but I didn't understand what you're saying, but that doesn't require, and then you characterized what it doesn't require.
It doesn't require that this be a rigid, permanent in the sense of inflexible.
Well, I don't understand.
But that's not the definition that was given by the board. The board didn't say.
Well, what is the right definition then? My understanding of a fixed curve is that it is indeed rigid. It's not going to change from that curve to any other shape. Are you saying that's not the correct definition, not the definition that was accepted?
I don't believe that
is.
Well,
what is then?
Because the definition that was given in the claim construction just says it's a fixed arc. It doesn't say it's a fixed curve, Your Honor.
A fixed arc.
The arc is fixed so that when you look at all the different configurations, there are no forces put on it that actually change it. And the reason for that, as was stated in the 662 patent, and it's true in Ostrowski, is after it expands, you don't have to do anything with that talon, which intercepts the lumen, because it already has the curve.
And the curve is not going to change.
And the curve is not changing.
But I would call that to be a permanent, rigid curve, wouldn't you?
But the claim doesn't call for rigid.
Well, what?
The claim itself, Your Honor, does not have a material limitation in it. This heating step, for example, is a process step. Mm-hmm. And I guess I'd like to give, just in my last statement, I would like to reiterate what I was starting out to say, which is what the board actually did wrong here. If we look at pages 31 and 32 of the board's final written opinion, then what it states there, it only has three paragraphs of analysis. The first paragraph only simply states what our contention is about Ostrowski, which is correct. But then it doesn't go on to analyze it. It jumps that step. It doesn't do a scope and content analysis of this prior art reference. It skips it. And it goes on and says, well, Dr. Loomis didn't tell us anything about a heating step to make this permanent. That's a reading into a limitation that just is a process limitation to an apparatus claim. And then it goes on to criticize Dr. Loomis because he didn't analyze all these other external forces. Can we imagine if every examiner that looks
this
at prior art...
This is turning into a very long last statement.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, but and if every examiner had to do that type of analysis every time it looked at a publication of a patent, that's not the way prior art is analyzed. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. The case is submitted.
All rise.